Get ready to jump off sides. We're going to get you with the hard count.
Let's go again!
Here's your host.
Get the gum out of your ears and listen up.
Aaron Nagler.
Don't shut me up!
And Andrew Garda.
I'm freaking velvety smooth.
And here we go.
Here we go again. Another NFL weekend in the books. Another hard count. Here I am, Andrew Garda. You're listening, like I just said, to the hard count here at CheeseheadTV.com. This is the NFL podcast. This is where all of the people who are tired of the Packers come to talk about other things than the Packers. And Packer fans come to mock us because they're 6-0. Of course, this is a weekly show. We always give you my thoughts on the NFL, what's going on here and there. We're going to be covering the trade deadline, which actually had trades. Two trades. Oh, wait, not so fast. Maybe not two trades. I'll explain that in a minute or two. We'll be talking a little 6-0 Packers. We'll be talking some Minnesota Vikings, new stadium, all that and more, as well as my picks for this weekend's NFL games. Again, this is the Hard Count. I'm Andrew Garda. And I'll start with a sort of pseudo-explanation of a little change in the background back here. It's not a huge change. It's not going to shock most of you. But scheduling has just been really, really difficult for Aaron to come by and join us each week. So he's going to focus on Packers transplants and some great NFL and Cheesehead TV Packers content. And I'm going to be flying solo for the foreseeable future here at Hard Count. And, you know, always miss chatting football with Aaron, but, you know, just don't want to put any more strain on him to try and work more stuff into his already ridiculously busy schedule of working and running Cheesehead TV with Corey Behnke, doing Packers transplants, and stalking Roger Goodell since now the NFL's in his building. The stalking part is pretty much a full-time sort of job for Aaron. So, you know, that's kind of what he's doing right now. You know, I don't think he's slept in a while. He's hiding in Goodell's office. So, Roger, when you hear this, that closet, that lump of laundry, that's probably Aaron. Seriously, though, it's just been really difficult to try and for him to try and work one more thing into his schedule. So he asked me if I could soldier on solo, and that's cool because that's what I've been doing for a very, very long time before joining Cheesehead TV. And Aaron will make his way back here when he can, and that'll be a special treat. So this is going to be me and my gig for a while, and I'm excited about it. And while I'm sorry that Aaron won't be able to join me regularly, I think it's going to be a little bit easier for him to kind of just do all of the other stuff that he does. It's a tremendous amount of work that that boy puts in on a daily basis. So, you know, we'll miss you, Aaron, but you can stick your nose in just about any time since show's on your site. So there you go. Aside from that, you can always catch my stuff over at Football Guys. My Fantasy Triage article is up, so if you're a subscriber over there, check that out. Give you some idea of what to do with some of the guys who are hurt and injured, potentially season-ending, such as Jason Campbell. And Campbell, gone for the season with a broken collarbone. His replacement has arrived in Oakland. Oh, it's not just Kyle Bowler. Yes, I did mention that there are actual trades at the trade deadline. Carson Palmer is a Raider. Now, you guys have heard this already because you don't live under a rock, but it was an interesting thing. You started to hear a little bit about it Monday afternoon, and then it sort of segued into full-on, hey, this is going to happen by Tuesday morning. And, you know, the Bengals have been sitting on Palmer for a really long time, and I touched on this on this week's from the press box. And, you know, Mike Brown and the Bengals, we're not going to trade Palmer. We're not going to trade Palmer. You know, he's a Bengal. He's going to stay a Bengal. If he wants to retire, that's fine. I never understood this. And I never understood this from the standpoint, well, a couple points of views. First of all, you know, if you don't want to be here, then be on your merry. You know, if you're not happy being somewhere, you don't want to be a part of this team. You don't want to be a part of this job, this organization. I don't like working at Microsoft anymore. I don't like, you know, drinking Coke. If you're not on board, then leave. Why force someone to stay in your organization? If you're the Bengals, if Carson Palmer's unhappy, why force him to stay there? Now, you're trying to prove a point that someone can't force their way out of the organization, but he did anyway. I mean, let's be honest. With the money Carson Palmer has, doesn't really need to, you know, play football again if he doesn't want to. So let's be honest. If he decided to retire, he's winning anyway. Doesn't get to play football anymore, but, you know, maybe it doesn't bother him all that much. All right, so you're not winning that battle. You're also not winning the smart battle, because the smart battle is getting a return on your investment. Long time ago, you invested, you know, quite a bit in Carson Palmer. You did it again when you extended his contract. You're letting him retire? Fine. You're not going to use him anyway. Here's the problem, Mike Brown. This is called Plaxicoing yourself. Because you have a commodity that people want. But you're not going to sell that commodity because you want to punish that commodity. You're proving a point with that commodity. So Carson Palmer can garner money, picks, whatever, but you're not going to do that. You're not going to take that from another team because you're trying to prove a point to Carson Palmer and the rest of the Bengals. So you're not improving your team by punishing another player. So in the scheme of things, you know, on the one hand, you have draft picks and money and whatever else, other players you can get for Carson Palmer. On the other hand, you have nothing. Because when Carson Palmer has retired, he's done. And you don't get a compensatory pick because your guy retired. I don't know, call me crazy, but the left hand I have here that has the picks and stuff in it, that has always made more sense to me. And again, you know, mention this in this week's column, but I didn't understand this with Barry Sanders. The Detroit Lions didn't want to trade Barry. Barry said, I don't want to be a Lion anymore. I want to be somewhere else. I'll retire, you know, otherwise. And the Lions called that bluff and said, fine. And Barry Sanders walked away from the game. On his terms, completely happy. So, you know, the Lions could have gotten a tremendous amount of picks, rebuilt that organization. Instead, they got nothing and continued to struggle for a long, long time. I mean, Barry Sanders' biggest problem was Wayne Fonts. It was one of the most ridiculous tenures of a coach ever. I don't know how that... What pictures he had of the Ford family are beyond me. Passed him on to Matt Millen, because Millen should have been fired longer before he was. But you look at the Detroit Lions, and, you know, Lions fans may chime in and say, no, you couldn't do it, you couldn't trade Barry Sanders, you could trade anybody. And they should have gotten something for Barry Sanders, and it might have helped that organization turn things around in less than two decades. And I understand Barry Sanders is one of the premier running backs ever to grace God's green earth, but I'll tell you what, he could have gotten the Detroit Lions a bunch of draft picks, maybe some players. Could have been a Herschel Walker trade, could have made a huge difference for the Detroit Lions. And it's the same thing for the Cincinnati Bengals and Mike Brown, who finally woke up and said, hey, I can get something for Carson Palmer. I can improve my team. He's not going to play for me anymore. I'm happy with Andy Dalton, which is an entirely different conversation, but I'm happy with Andy Dalton. Might as well get something for Carson Palmer. I've proven my point, which is a stupid point to have to prove anyway. Carson Palmer, of course, the Raiders came heavy because they knew that, you know, Brown's a little irrational. They gave up their first-round pick in 2012 and a conditional pick in 2013, which I believe can escalate depending on Palmer, to a first-round pick again. Let's talk about how serious the Raiders were for this, by the way. Because the Oakland Raiders have no picks in the first four rounds of the 2012 draft. Raider fan, you have nothing to talk about for 2.5 days of the coming draft next April. You have nothing to talk about. You're done. Now, they will get some compensatory picks for losing guys like Nnamdi Asamoah. How's Philly doing, Nnamdi? I'm sure it's wonderful there. But the Oakland Raiders have gone, and I mean, this is, I don't remember who said it first, but people put it perfectly. They went all in. They went all in on Carson Palmer because you build through the draft. And yeah, the Raiders haven't done a great job of doing that. All right, I'll give them that. But you build through the draft. And they're not going to be doing that next year. And ask the Jets how difficult they can be sometimes to hit effectively when you don't have that many picks. I mean, we watched Sean Green struggle a little bit in New York. Sanchez has issues. You know, those two guys especially in that draft class, if they don't cut it, I mean, the Jets had three picks that class. You know, the linemen they picked up late, I don't, you know, not even really in the conversation, but Sean Green was their third-round pick, their second pick, because they had nothing between the first and the second. And, of course, Mark Sanchez they traded up to get, which is why they didn't have a second. The Jets have been able to feed in guys to their meat grinder to keep things going. The Raiders, they've missed on a bunch of picks. You know, Darius Hayward-Bey is finally kind of coming around. Denarius Moore is great when they use him. They have some good receivers. It's a team that's not bad, but they have missed on some picks. But they had enough picks to where it's offset by the guys like Darren McFadden who hit. You have nothing. You have your fifth, sixth, and seventh. Maybe on some of these compensatory picks, you'll pick up a fourth again. But you've got nothing. So you're all in. The Raiders apparently also went after Vince Young. But Hugh Jackson, head coach of the Raiders, worked with Carson Palmer. And Palmer's pretty familiar with the way that the offense runs in Oakland. It's very similar to the Bengals' offense. They don't use a lot of like keywords. You're not going to hear him yelling Omaha, Omaha like Eli Manning for the last 3 years, which probably is tipping defenses off to what he's doing. Just a thought. But you're going to hear, you know, Carson Palmer uses a lot of number routes. He's going to be, you know, or the Raiders use a lot of number routes, a lot of numbered plays. Palmer is used to that. And they've been kind of coy about whether he's going to start week seven. He's starting week seven. You don't pay this much. And all he really needs to do is hand the ball off. And frankly, you know, Kyle Bowler going up against Kansas City. If you want to get Carson Palmer's feet wet, Kansas City's probably the place to dip his toe. I mean, honestly, I don't see him not starting, barring some horrible practice. Kyle Bowler started practice when Carson showed up, but Carson ended up taking over all of the first team reps. So this, I mean, you don't tend to get a lot of big trades at the trade deadline. The NFL is not like baseball or hockey, where you'll get a big trade every once in a while right at the deadline. It's rare. And to have Carson Palmer traded from Cincinnati after, you know, months of hearing it was never going to happen. And again, I'm glad for Bengal fan. I'm not sold on Dalton yet. I think once the wind picks up, it's going to be difficult for him to throw with that arm into the wind. But he's played well. He's played above expectations right now. I always say, you know, I'm going to criticize a player because I watch a lot of games and I watch a lot of footage. And I see some of these guys up close. And I watched Dalton at the Senior Bowl. And his arm, he floats too many balls. He's done a good job. I think A.J. Green has been a big help for him. But I think he has deficiencies. And I think that he's going to struggle once the weather gets colder and the wind picks up. I'll criticize a player. Prove me wrong. I'm happy to be proven wrong. Cam Newton's proven me wrong. It's not that I thought that he wouldn't make it. I just thought it would take him a lot longer to look good. We'll see if he can keep it up into next year when teams have a full year of tape on him. But, you know, I'm happy to be proven wrong. I don't think that Dalton is their answer at quarterback. Fact of the matter is, though, you know, this team has been doing okay. Why not add something to it? Why not get a couple of picks for a guy who you're not going to use anymore? Carson Palmer wasn't coming back, and if he did, he wasn't going to supplant Andy Dalton. It wasn't happening. So this is a great move for the Bengals. I think that, you know, potentially a pair of first round picks is fantastic. And they got rid of, they've cleared that clubhouse. T.O. gone. Ocho Cinco gone. And boy, does he suck in New England. That from the rumor is that his teammates are having to tell him where he's supposed to line up on plays still. I have a hard time believing that just because I can't imagine the hoodie would deal with that. Like, I would assume Belichick would send him packing, but I don't know. So those two guys are gone. Palmer's not a malcontent, but he wasn't happy. And I mean, I don't blame him in a lot of respects. It's the same problem. I go back to Barry Sanders again. Not happy because of the way they were running that franchise, because of the, you know, not giving him enough tools around him. With Carson Palmer, there were constantly problems with the offense. There just too many problems with the wide receivers, too many problems with the offensive line for large portions of the time. I mean, you know, there must be some other problems he had beyond what we've heard. Honestly, though, you know, if he doesn't want to be there, let him go and get something for him. And that's what Mike Brown did. So mission accomplished. Hats off to Mike Brown for waking up and smelling the coffee. Finally, I think this is a pretty good fit for the Raiders. Now, here's the thing. Carson Palmer was a fantastic quarterback, and then he hurt his arm, and then he hurt his Achilles, and he has never been the same guy. Ever. Now, I'm not even going to say he didn't have the same talented receivers they have in Oakland, because at their prime, Chad Johnson and TJ Houshmandzadeh were pretty good weapons for him. You know, they didn't have a great running back core. You know, like, Rudy Johnson was all right. Corey Dillon was better for New England. I mean, Cedric Benson's okay. I mean, he does pretty well. But ultimately, he had weapons. But he wasn't happy, and maybe you could argue that the offense wasn't really well run when he was there. All that aside, I mean, this is a situation where he goes to an offense that, pretty good offensive line right now, fantastic run game, good wide receivers. The big question is, going back to that Achilles, that elbow, ever since he came back from his injuries, he has not been the same quarterback. He has not thrown with the same authority. He has seemed tentative. He has not felt confident. I mean, he doesn't look like he feels comfortable in the pocket. All of these things are certainly factors in Carson Palmer's decline. He is not the quarterback he used to be. And I'm not totally sure if he's a huge upgrade over Jason Campbell at this point. I know I'm not the only one saying that. But I have to wonder, you know, if he's a guy who's going to succeed all that well. If he's just not, he's not the quarterback he used to be, and I'm just not sold that he's going to step right in and be fantastic. You know, he hasn't been fantastic in a long time, so is he going to be able to reboot his career? Sometimes it works. Sometimes, you know, a new venue, a different place, can mean all the, everything. So Palmer could step right into Oakland and be very good. I just have to think that if Jason Campbell doesn't break his collarbone, the Raiders never do this. And if that's the case, to some extent, I think they think that maybe Jason Campbell is at least, maybe not as good as Carson Palmer was, but might be as good as Carson Palmer is. You got to figure this is the end of Jason Campbell, because you don't give up essentially, you know, two first-round draft picks for a guy who you're going to let go in a year or two. And oh, by the way, Carson Palmer has reworked his deal. It's now worth $43 million, will run through the 2014 season. So this will be interesting to see. And by the way, Terrell Pryor is still around, but Pryor's not ready for prime time at all. You know, I don't think you need to be a brain surgeon to know that. It's just, he's just not ready. It's going to be a while. I said there were two trades, or two almost trades. The other trade was that the Detroit Lions picked up Ronnie Brown from the Philadelphia Eagles. Back up the truck. Turns out, no, that's not happening. And what is a fairly rare occurrence, because really, this just doesn't happen all that often. The trade between the Philadelphia Eagles and the Detroit Kitty Cats was voided. It was voided because, not because of anything to do with Ronnie Brown, but voided because Jerome Harrison couldn't pass his physical. Of course, whenever you have a trade, you will put in certain caveats, essentially saying, listen, if these players aren't healthy, trade's null and void, not going to happen. Well, turns out that sums up with Jerome Harrison. People thought he was a scratch last week. People thought he was a healthy scratch. Something's got to be going on with him. So, you know, he's done. So he didn't pass the physical, and trade's voided. Ronnie Brown will go back to being LeSean McCoy's backup in Philadelphia. And for what it's worth, his fantasy value is back to nothing. And the Detroit Lions backfield is a very big, confusing mess, because we have Javid Best, who may be out with a concussion again. And oh, by the way, I like Javid Best. I think he's a fantastic running back, phenomenal talent. These concussions are a concern. A, homie better change his helmet. There are a couple of guys who have new helmets in the league. There are some very, very good helmets that have cut down, or the theory is that they will cut down on concussions. Javid Best should look into sponsoring those, because that man has more concussions, and he's going to Brian Westbrook himself out of the league. It's not good. So Best is out with a concussion, which pretty much now leaves a apparently ailing Jerome Harrison and Keelan Williams. Maurice Morris is also there. So Williams and Morris have split first-team reps. They did today. This is Wednesday. I would say Morris will probably get some carries. Williams is a big bruising back. He's not a guy who is, you know, especially fast. Not a phenomenal running back, but he has some value, I think. But Detroit, I wrote an article saying that like a week ago, saying that Detroit was healthier than the Packers. Turns out, I guess not. So that trade is voided, which, folks, that just doesn't happen very often, because who the hell tries to trade an injured player? Apparently, the answer to that question is the Detroit Lions. The Detroit Lions, coached by bombastic, crazy pants Jim Schwartz. I talked about this in this week's From the Press Box. I've talked about it on Twitter. I've watched the video like 50 times. Was Jim Harbaugh over-exuberant? Yes. Was he maybe over the top? Absolutely. Could he have dialed it back a little bit? Sure. But you know what? He didn't slide tackle. You're getting cleat, Schwartz. Gave him a handshake and a slap on the back. A little hard, that slap on the back. But it didn't require a response from Schwartz that was him running across the field like a fourth grader chasing a kid who took his M&Ms. I mean, I don't understand that. And then, you know, well, I was cursed at. You were cursed at after you chased after Harbaugh. And oh, by the way, and you knew there was more to this. You knew this didn't just happen. You knew something triggered it. Maybe Schwartz was a little bit butthurt because he was feeling a little karmic blow there. Because earlier there was a scoring controversy. There was a play. Harbaugh wanted to challenge it, but it was something that was automatically challenged. so you can't challenge an automatic challenge. And apparently Schwartz said something to the effect, something along the lines of, like, you have to know your rules or something snide and rude. And I'm guessing someone on the Niners side saw it and said something to Harbaugh. Guess what, Mr. Coach Schwartz, dude? When you are a tool during the game, people will enjoy that victory more than had you kept your trap shut. So, in the immortal words of Will Smith, don't start none, won't be none. Because honestly, man, I don't blame Harbaugh for going a little bit ape. Whoop. You know, he got excited because you were undefeated. You were cocky. You were talking trash during the game. You lost. I wonder if Schwartz just was feeling a little bit burned because of that. But I call that karma. Both of them were acting like three-year-olds. Like, Harbaugh needed to dial it back quite a bit, and Schwartz never should have charged after him. The entire thing was ridiculous. But thank God they did it, because what else would we talk about on a Monday night before the Jets-Dolphins game, which was one of the bigger yawners I've ever seen. And you guys know that I grew up a Jets fan. Jets-Dolphins rivalry is phenomenal. That game was awful. That was awful. It was a horrific team making a mediocre team look good. And I say that was all with all affection for the Jets, but that game was far closer than it should have been for far too long. Now, first of all, if Matt Moore gets anyone to catch a ball, this is a much different game. Brandon Marshall dropped at least two balls and was turf monstered. Made a great catch. It's like a 46-yard reception. He was running down the sideline, and the turf monster came and tripped him and pushed him out of bounds. Now, if you are not familiar with the turf monster is an invisible monster who lives in the graft or turf of any football stadium and is responsible for players who accidentally trip over their own feet, who fall for no reason, who fall out of bounds for no reason. The turf monster took down Brandon Marshall not once but twice. He shoved him out of bounds once. He tripped him up another time. He got, if I remember correctly, got Sean Green as well. But Brandon Marshall fell out of bounds. If Marshall keeps his feet, and by the way, no Jet there to push him out of bounds. If Marshall keeps his feet, you know, the Dolphins go up, this could be a very different game. It was just very sloppy. It took the Jets a whole half to get their act together. There are things I like with the Jets. The offensive line was playing well. Jeremy Curley, wide receiver, I think he's going to be fantastic for that offense. You know, Plaxico Burress looks lazy and out of sorts still. The run game is not exciting. I don't know why they're not giving Joe McKnight not more carries. The defense is okay. It's not playing up to par. The Dolphins are a train wreck. The Dolphins are definitely in the suck for luck sweepstakes. I don't know that they're going to be able to catch the Colts, although they are both undefeated. The Colts may be worse. I'm just saying. Miami, the Colts, Kansas City. It was interesting. Somebody brought up Cleveland as a possibility for luck. And my thought immediately was like, no, I don't think they're going to be bad enough. But I was reminded they have two first-round picks. And at this point, their first-round pick looks like it's going to be high. Their second first-round pick, follow that one if you can, came from Atlanta for the whole Julio Jones thing. Julio Jones out, by the way. So I will be Aaron Nagler for a minute and go, wait, wasn't that the pick that was supposed to secure a Super Bowl for them? What? But I digress. So they've got the Atlanta Falcons, the way they're playing. I don't think that they're going to come out of their division with a division title. And I'm not sure they're going to be able to get one of the wild cards, even if they play really, really well from here on out. So I think you're probably looking at a Falcons pick for the Browns. I'd say somewhere in the neighborhood of the middle first round. So they have the guns to move up. I like Colt McCoy quite a bit, But if they have the opportunity to go get Andrew Luck, I think they think very hard about it. They can make a power move. Denver's in the running. We're about to see the Tim Tebow experience, folks. We'll talk a little bit about Timmy football a few minutes from now. But so the Suck for Luck sweepstakes right now, you know, Colts in first, Miami not that far behind them, and then I would say a distant sort of Denver, Kansas City, Cleveland sort of scenario. I don't know. St. Louis is in the running, but I don't know. You guys know that I'm tight with Mr. Cecil Lammy of footballguys.com, of course. Also, NFL Insider for 102.3 The Fan over in Denver. And Cecil's feeling on Luck. And I've watched a lot of Luck film from last year. I haven't watched the stuff that I recorded yet this year, because I've just been a little pressed for time. But the way Cecil feels is like, listen, if you're anybody, you're taking a look at Luck. And if you are, even if you have Sam Bradford, if you are the Rams and you end up in the first pick somehow, you really take a hard look at Andrew Luck. And not just in a, oh, I'm going to pretend that I'm interested because I'm not really, but I want to trade out sort of way. No, you take a hard look at Andrew Luck because he's that good. So, you know, I'll give you guys my thoughts on him a little later on in the season, and definitely throughout the offseason and the draft process, as the hard count will continue on through there. As I do this year-round. But in the Suck for Luck sweepstakes, nobody is completely out of it, because everybody would take him if they could. Yeah, we'll see. I mean, there are plenty of guys who've been phenomenally talented that don't pan out. But Luck seems to have everything going for him. There's this huge, weird sort of rumor that Luck and his dad were, you know, looking to manipulate the draft process to make sure that he doesn't go to a crappy team. You know, like Eli Manning didn't really want to go to San Diego. How'd that work out, Eli? You know, so he engineered this shenanigans. And, you know, I'll be honest, Philip Rivers is much better quarterback than Eli Manning. Much better. San Diego did much better. If San Diego was coached by Tom Coughlin, they would have had a Super Bowl at this point. Sorry, Norv. Norv Turner already getting a little upset because Rex Ryan said that had the Chargers hired him in 2007, they would have won two Super Bowls already. And Norv said, you know, Ryan called and apologized, like, I didn't mean to mean that he wasn't a very good coach. It's all right, Rex. He can't win a playoff game. This is Norv Turner. He doesn't win playoff games. You know, great in the regular season, poor in playoffs. It's like Jerry Maguire. Good as friends, bad at commitment. So, you know, this is not a shock. Norv Turner, though, fired back and said, well, where's Rex's rings that he's promised now for 2 years for New York, which I thought was pretty funny. But honestly, I mean, the Eli Manning wasn't the reason they won that Super Bowl. That wasn't like Aaron Rodgers taking over a game. That wasn't Joe Montana coming in and willing a victory. You know, Eli Manning is a good quarterback. He's not a great quarterback. You put him in San Diego, San Diego's still the same place. You put Philip Rivers in New York, I think that the Giants have been contending more strongly. If they had Philip Rivers, they would have contended far more strongly. That's my opinion. I'll be back in a couple minutes. I'm going to get a sip of water and take a little break here. You are listening to The Hard Count. I'm Andrew Garda here on the fabulous CheeseheadTV.com. I'll be right back.
We'll be right back.
are back. It's the Hard Count. I'm Andrew Garda. A little For Whom the Bell Tolls as we segue into some Tebow talk here, because the bell is tolling for young Timmy Football. That's right, Tim Tebow going to be starting for the Denver Broncos this weekend. What will that mean? What is going to happen? And he's going to be doing it without Brandon Lloyd. Brandon Lloyd, who was traded last week to the St. Louis Rams. Another big trade. There's a lot of big trades at the tail end of this trade time. He's going to have to make do with a returning Demaryius Thomas, who was taken instead of Dez Bryant, who ended up with the Cowboys, because Josh McDaniels liked Demaryius Thomas's personality more, thought he was more of a team player. Unfortunately, he's also been an injury risk, as he has hurt his Achilles and hurt his hand. He still has screws and a plate in his hand, is playing right now with a big puffy bandage on it, trying to learn how to catch with that on it. So you've got him. You've got Julius Thomas, Orange Julius, tight end, who's going to be coming back from his injury. And you have Eric Decker, who's played pretty well so far this season. He doesn't really fit Tebow's game incredibly well, but I think he could be a real asset to Tebow. I think he could do pretty well. Demaryius Thomas, if he's healthy, can do very well. But, you know, ultimately losing Brandon Lloyd is a huge problem, and here's why. Because Brandon Lloyd, you can throw up anything anywhere, and he's going to make a play on it. And let's be honest, Tim Tebow's not the most accurate fellow when it comes to throwing the ball. The longer the throw goes, the less accurate he is. So Brandon Lloyd was very useful in terms of going up and getting those sort of errant passes that Tebow likes to distribute. It's why he worked well with Kyle Orton as well, because Orton has a tendency to overthrow and not hit his receivers either. Brandon Lloyd was good at adjusting. I think he's going to be a huge asset up in St. Louis for Sam Bradford. And, you know, he credits Josh McDaniels, who's the OC up there now, with his huge 2010. So, you know, Lloyd may be better off. But, you know, Tebow's lost weapons. Is this a fire sale? I don't know. We've talked about it before. I'm not sure whether it is or not. I'm not really sure if you could say that they're giving Tebow a real firm shot. But you're going to have, you know, 11 games to figure out whether this kid can play football as an NFL quarterback at the NFL level. And this is where the rubber hits the road. You know, all of the Tebow fanatics, everybody's been out there going, oh, you know, he's a hard worker. He does nothing but win. And a lot of guys coming into the NFL are hard workers and do nothing but win. Doesn't guarantee you a starting gig or success. That said, you know, Tim Tebow is an incredibly hard worker. See what I did there? He is, though. He's one of those guys where I do believe his dedication can take him very far. I don't know that he's going to be able to succeed as an NFL quarterback. His mechanics are sloppy. His footwork is sort of horrid. He's a guy who just, you know, he just doesn't have the arm strength to do what he needs to. I mean, there's a lot of minuses for him. I mean, we've all heard him before. I don't want to rehash him. Tell you what he does do, though, is he provides a spark for this team. And that's a huge thing. And, you know, I brought up Mr. Lammy earlier. He was at the stadium when Tebow went in. It energized the crowd. It energized the team. Orton doesn't do that. At the end of the day, Kyle Orton, we've talked about how he's not a guy who's going to win you a game from behind. He has problems in the red zone. He's not a big leader, rah-rah guy. Tebow is. I mean, Tebow, intangible-wise, has everything you want. Strong-willed, fierce competitor. Physically, it's the problem. But I think that the Broncos needed to make this switch. It's too bad they couldn't do it at the beginning of the season. I think the season might have gone differently. I'm not saying that they'd be doing a tremendous amount better, but frankly, let's be honest. You know, Aaron and I talked about this in August. I think we talked about this in July. Orton's not a guy who's going to win you a lot of games. He doesn't have it. Tebow has it. It's just a matter of whether it is enough to overcome his deficiencies. So I'll be watching a lot of Tim Tebow this weekend. I'm going to watch that game, and I will probably watch it on Game Rewind at least one more time. I'm fascinated to see, you know, and this for me is a long-term project. It's not just about declaring whether he's a good quarterback or not come Monday. I want to see him over the next 10 games, the next 11 games. How does he do throughout the season? Not over a three-game period like he did last year where he played an awful defense. Well, he came in and did a little bit, then played an awful defense, and then played a defense that had quit. Everybody likes to point to the last three games where he just was phenomenal. But frankly, he was okay. He did what he was supposed to do. Let's see him play some better defenses now. I mean, don't tell me the Packers wouldn't have smoked him. Packers who get Christian Ponder this week. It's a hell of a time to make that switch, Leslie Frazier. Especially considering Donovan McNabb has had so much success against the Packers in his career. But, you know, again, sometimes you just need to pull the trigger. And you got to wonder if the Vikings look at the rest of the NFL rookies. Dalton's doing pretty well. Cam Newton's doing really well. You know, they look at those guys and they go, man, why not us? We like Ponder. We believe in him. Maybe he's our guy. Blaine Gabbert's, yeah, he's passable. I mean, he's where I thought Newton would be right now. So, I don't know. You're looking at a situation where Tebow might not have the weapons he needs to really succeed. You know, I don't know. Conspiracy theorist-wise, you know, everybody seems to think that John Fox and John Elway don't like the kid. That they're stripping the franchise and hoping to suck for luck. I don't know. I'm not much of a tinfoil hat kind of guy myself, to be absolutely honest. So I'm not going to get into that too much. I'm fascinated to watch. And from by all accounts, the guy is a very, very nice guy. He's the type of guy you do root for. I just don't know he's going to be able to pull it off. I still have my doubts. I'll give the kid a chance. Like I said about Dalton, like, you know, I've said about a lot of guys. Prove me wrong. I will absolutely praise a player when he does something beyond what I expected. Cam Newton has certainly opened my eyes up this year. I've been wrong on guys before. I'll be wrong again. That's how I learn, you know, that's how I get better as a guy who's scouting, as a guy who's analyzing the game. You learn by screwing up sometimes. All that being said, I just don't expect Tebow to prove me wrong. We talked a minute ago about Minnesota and Christian Ponder. They're still trying to figure out the stadium issue. Finally, Minnesota Governor Mark Dayton has put his weight, politically, behind the Arden Hills plan. There were several sites, Arden Hills, Ramsey County, and potentially some stuff in Minneapolis. And Dayton met with the team, met with league officials, and he decided that Arden Hills was the way to go with Minneapolis as a fallback. And what he said was, and talk about this as telling, I'd want a stadium to be in Minneapolis rather than Los Angeles, Dayton said. The only site the Vikings are willing to consider and put $400 or $500 million into is Arden Hills. Right there, I mean, that's your answer. That's where you want to go then. Arden Hills, because the team is going to sink money into it. The state's also going to contribute $300 million at maximum toward the project. So the Vikings are encouraged about the situation. I'm not going to call off the Vikings might move to Los Angeles party yet. Let's see how this goes, because this could all still fall apart. This could very easily implode, catch fire, and crash and burn. But this is a good first step. I don't want to see Minnesota go. I've long said, and I still say, that an expansion team would probably be the better way to go in Los Angeles. Something that is theirs. I don't like the idea of stealing another person's team. And the Vikings may suck right now, but there's some great rivalries in the NFC North with the Bears, the Packers, and the Lions. And I'd hate to see that broken up, because you can't imagine. I don't think they'd stay in the North, would they, in Los Angeles? Like, I couldn't see that making much sense. So hopefully this will stay together and this gets done. But I will say, excuse me, because I want to be honest, during the lockout, I more than once said, you know, if you guys are going to cry poor, if you get the $1 billion you want, I certainly don't want to hear you guys complain about not getting money from the states. And whereas they didn't get the full $1 billion they wanted, I think it's ballsy to cry poor and then hold a state or city over the barrel for money for a stadium. And some people gave the Packers some crap because they were going to sell some more Packer shares, like $200 a pop. And I remember arguments with Aaron and a couple other people. People were like, you know, they're not really voting stock. You don't really own the team. It's a novelty thing. And they're kind of screwing their fans over. I kind of agree with Aaron's point of view. They need to raise money. They were given permission to do it. People know what they're in for. They do it. I'd rather have teams do stuff like that to raise money than reach into my pocket as a taxpayer. So I'm sorry. The economy is crap. People are jobless everywhere. The infrastructure in the country could really use a tune-up. A lot of states are struggling tremendously to make their budgets. And the Minnesota Vikings are looking for $300 million to make a stadium. Are you crapping me? Especially with the Jets and Giants, I think the entire thing, or pretty damn close, was privately financed. You can do it. The rich owners don't want to. They don't want to spend their money. So while they take all the risks, they take all the chances, they don't take all the chances. You know who takes chances? State government. That's who takes the chance. So I'm glad for the Vikings. I'm disappointed to hear that they've got their hand out. Business as usual in the NFL, unfortunately. So, all right, we've only got about 12 minutes left, because we try and keep the show on the hour, every hour. So let's take a quick look at the games. And keeping in my theme the last couple weeks, of course, those of you who remember the first time Aaron did this to me, Mr. Nagler sprung this on me, didn't tell me he was going to. So now I'm like not looking at the games ahead of time, and instead, you know, just trying to sort of look at them for the first time when I make my picks. You know, and of course I've thought about the picks, and I've had other stuff going on, so, you know, it's not like I don't know who's playing who, but Week 7's game kickoff on Sunday. Let's start at the bottom of the barrel, or one of the bottoms of one of the barrels. Seahawks going to Cleveland to face the Browns. Of course, we don't know if Tarvarius Jackson is going to be playing or Charlie Whitehurst. Neither one is very exciting. Marshawn Lynch has been running all right. The Seahawks have played well. They had a big win against the Giants and haven't overall looked all that impressive, to be quite honest. Colt McCoy is playing well, but not outstandingly. Peyton Hillis may not be playing, so it's maybe Montario. Oh, my knee, Hardesty! And the receiving core there is unimpressive. Browns are the home team, though. And with the quarterback situation unsettled in Seattle, I mean, as much as Tarvarius Jackson isn't all that good, Charlie Whitehurst is manageable. I like the Browns here. I think their defense is a little more consistent. And I think they come away with a little 500 record, whereas the Seahawks are going to be home or heading home 2-4 and starting to wonder whether they might need to suck for luck. Next up, we've got the Falcons visiting the Detroit Lions. The Detroit Lions coming off a pretty crappy weekend where they lost their first game to the 49ers, and then their coach got into a pissing match with the other coach, and it was like watching parents have to get escorted off the field at their kid's Pee Wee Junior game. Meanwhile, the Falcons come into Detroit 3-3, skidding a little bit, not playing as well as they could have. Matt Ryan seems to have taken a huge step back. Michael Turner's having a very good season. Roddy White, bad game last week. Julio Jones out. The other side, you've got Matt Stafford playing very well. Calvin Johnson is unconscious. Nate Burleson, Titus Young playing very well. Brandon Pettigrew playing very well. The only problem here would be the rush game. Javid Best may not play, so it's Keelan Williams and Maurice Morris. Despite that, I go with Detroit. I think they're fired up after that loss to the 49ers. They're going to want to prove a couple of things. And the Falcons are just not good enough to prevent this Lions offense from scoring, even if it's the Lions offense without their lead running back. Moving on, we got the Texans and the Titans. The Texans, who should be running away with their division and aren't, for the love of God, why? Going up against the Titans in a divisional matchup. The Titans 3-2 right now, have not lost at home. Meanwhile, the Texans are 1-2 away, 3-3 overall, and without Andre Johnson, unlikely to play. It's possible he will, but it's unlikely he'll play. Aaron Foster should bounce back this week against the Tennessee Titans. They can be run on. Matt Schaub should have an okay day, but missing Andre Johnson is going to really hurt them. Matt Hasselbeck playing better than he has maybe ever. Chris Johnson still not quite back to the, you know, level of running back awesomeness that we're used to seeing. And some question marks in terms of the wide receiver core. They've got Nate Washington, they've got Damian Williams. But overall, the Titans are missing that one big player known as Kenny Britt. And it's hurt him a little bit. They're home. They're tough to beat at home right now. I want to say the Texans win this game, but something tells me they don't. I'm going with the Titans in this, and God help us all. I don't know what's going on with the Texans. Injuries to their defense also are a concern. So this is going to be a big deal. The Texans really need to figure out what they need to do to right the ship, because I'm not sure that a wild card team is coming out of this division. Moving on, the Broncos, 1-4, heading to Miami for Tebow Day. And the Miami Dolphins. All right, weird things about this game. It is indeed Tebow game. It's actually the Florida Gators anniversary of Tebow winning the national championship thingy. They've decided to honor them. At least now they're honoring a starting quarterback, not the number three quarterback. The Dolphins, as I mentioned when I talked about the Jets earlier, are awful. They are horrific. They are not good. Daniel Thomas has been playing all right. Brandon Marshall is inconsistent, dropped too many passes, and just didn't play well the other night against the Jets. I mean, he had good stats, but he didn't have a good game, and there's a difference. And the difference is he dropped too many balls, and he's too inconsistent. And we've got Matt Moore not looking particularly great. On the other hand, you have Tim Tebow coming in. Willis McGahee, the lead back here, has been playing pretty well, and you've got Eric Decker and Demaryius Thomas who need to step up. I think this is going to be closer than it should be. I think it's going to be an awful game to watch, but I think that Tim Tebow is going to notch a win, and you're going to have to put up with, see, we told you, for the next week until the Broncos meet their next victim. So I see the Broncos and Tim Tebow winning this, ending up at 2-4, and maybe possibly still within reach of my 8-8 projection. Moving on, the Chargers and the Jets. Jets at home, they have not lost at home this year. The Chargers 4-1, split their games away 1-1. This is going to be a tough game. Phillip Rivers is going to come in. He is doing very well this season, not hitting as many touchdowns as he wants. He started off slow, but he started to right the ship the last couple weeks. I shouldn't say he's doing very well this season. That's overstating it quite a bit. Ryan Matthews playing well. Vincent Jackson not playing well and hurt. Antonio Gates may or may not be back for this. You know, this is a Chargers team that should give the Jets a lot of trouble, but they're so banged up on the offense that I just don't know that's going to be the case. Mark Sanchez starting to get back into a rhythm, get more comfortable behind this offensive line that is finally blocking well. That was against the Dolphins, but still, it's a good step forward. Sean Green looks like he's running in molasses. I really wish this team would get Joe McKnight some more carries. Give him. I mean, this is a guy who's electric when he touches the ball. Find a way to get him the ball. They threw the ball to him a couple times last week against the Dolphins. I think they get him more involved. I think they get Jeremy Curley, the other rookie that I've been looking at. Bilal Powell is going to be inactive again, but I would like to see him get some luggage, get some young blood here. Dustin Keller, their tight end, has kind of led their team, which is a pretty sad thing right now with only 319 yards. This Jets offense is not going to have a great day against the Chargers, but I think they come away with the victory, as I just think that the Chargers offense is too beat up to beat the Jets at home. Bears at Buccaneers. The Bears, it ain't pretty. It really isn't. Jay Cutler's getting hit way too often, and apparently he cursed out Mike March. Shocker. Matt Forte is both the lead rusher and the lead receiver in this offense. That's not a great combination, but it is if you're a fantasy football player. 99 carries already, though, and we're just past the first quarter poll in the season. That could be a lot of carries for Forte. Josh Freeman started to play a little bit better. LeGarrette Blount may not play again. He's still banged up. You've got Aurelius Ben coming on. Mike Williams hasn't been playing very well. These are two teams that are not particularly great, but I think the Buccaneers are in a little bit better place right now. Ernest Graham has filled in ably for LeGarrette Blount, and I just don't like what I've seen from the Bears lately, and they struggle away from home right now, so I'm going with the Buccaneers over the Bears. Redskins and Panthers. John Beck. This would be a call that probably would be easier to make if it was anybody but John Beck. Maybe not Grossman, and Rex Grossman may still get the start, but he probably won't. I don't love John Beck. I don't know why he's still in conversation for a starting gig. I think this is going to be a disaster for the Redskins, who seem to be in control of their division for a while. Fred Davis and Jabbar Gaffney have been two very good receivers for them. Santana Moss has been having issues. The running back is a running back by committee, hot hand there. The Panthers' defense has played pretty well. Cam Newton has played very, very well, and they've started to run the ball a little bit, and it's very hard to stop Steve Smith. I don't see the Redskins as being able to stop the Panthers. I actually think the Panthers at home are going to get their second win of the season. I'm calling the Panthers on this one. Raiders, Chiefs, this is an easy one. First afternoon game. The Chiefs are a mess. The Raiders are not. Now it's going to be, what can Carson Palmer do? I don't think he's going to have to throw the ball very much. This is going to be Darren McFadden, and the Chiefs don't have an answer to any of those names, McFadden. So the Raiders, I think, are going to end up winning this pretty handily at home. Steelers and Cardinals. What happened to the Cardinals? The Cardinals were a hot shut your mouth the first week or so of the season, and now they're just crapola. I don't think that Kevin Cobb is very good. I thought he had proved me wrong, but I made that basis off of one game, and he hasn't been very good since. Beanie Wells, if he's back, he should be able to run on the Steelers a little bit, but I don't expect much from him because it's still relatively tough to run on them. Larry Fitzgerald's tailed off now that Cobb has kind of come back down to earth. I don't think they're going to be able to do much against the Steelers' defense. And the Steelers' offense has struggled at times, but Roethlisberger, Mendenhall, and guys like Wallace and Hines Ward are going to be able to move the ball against this defense. I think that we see the Pittsburgh Steelers running away with this one. I'm calling Steelers over the Cardinals in Arizona. Moving on, Rams, Cowboys. Oh my God, poor Rams. Poor Cowboys. I'd call this one a Cowboy win running away, except for the fact that Tony Romo finds a way to lose these games. Still, Romo has both Dez Bryant and Miles Austin back. Jason Witten is there. The only question is the run game, because Felix Jones may not play, but even without them, this really shouldn't be too hard for the Cowboys. I'm taking the Cowboys Rams, what happened to you guys? Sam Bradford's playing with a high ankle sprain. He's got Brandon Lloyd as his new toy. It's not going to be enough against the Cowboys. So, like I said, I'm picking the Cowboys. Packers, Vikings. It's the beginning of the Ponder era. It's not going to be a pretty beginning to the Ponder era. There's not a lot of wide receiver help here. Adrian Peterson is going to be able to run on the Packers, but that's about all that's going to be able to happen. Rodgers is going to get this team on the board early. Jennings, Nelson, Jones, Cobb are all guys who could potentially, or Michael Finley could potentially score very early. I think this is going to be a Packers running away. I'm not sure when the Packers are going to lose their next game. Like, I don't think they're going to lose at home, and games like this away is not going to be that tough. I hope Ponder survives it. That's my only hope for Christian Ponder. So the Vikings will win if Ponder survives. That's going to be a win for them, but in terms of actual wins and losses as to their record, it's going to be 1-6 after this little debacle. Sunday night, we have the Colts at Saints, and I'm sure that looked a lot better before Peyton Manning's neck went all kablonky. The Colts are horrific. Painter's done all right. I don't think he's a bad quarterback. I don't think you want to have to rely on him all season, but they have to. Will Adai be back? Probably not, so you're going to see a little bit more of Delone Carter and Donald Brown. It doesn't matter, though. The Saints are just going to open up on these guys. Breeze, you're going to see a lot of Mark Ingram, I think. I think this is going to be Mark Ingram's big game where he really opens some eyes up and makes a huge difference in the offense. And, you know, and it's Drew Brees. Drew Brees is going to throw lots of touchdowns. So this is going to be a Saints romp against the Colts, who will go on to 0-7 and are still in pole position for Andrew Luck if he comes out. Monday Night Football, Ravens-Jags, another game that must have looked a lot better early on in the season when they planned this. The Jaguars, Flacco, Rice, Anquan Boldin, and that defense. I like Blaine Gabbert. He hasn't exactly set the world on fire, but we knew he was going to struggle. He's going to struggle against this Ravens defense. Jones-Drew has done well, but not fantastic. Probably have a very rough game against this Ravens defense. Do you hear a theme coming? And really, the wide receivers here are nothing to write home about. I like Mike Thomas, but he's a much better slot receiver than he is a primary receiver. And his numbers show that. He has struggled to get separation. He has struggled to be able to put a lot of points on the board. This is going to be a Ravens romp. Monday Night Football is going to be fugly this week. So that's it. Those are my picks this week for all of your NFL games. I want to thank you guys for stopping by and listening to me babble for a little over an hour. And as always, I want to thank Aaron and Corey for inviting me and having me on CheeseheadTV.com. I do enjoy the community here quite a bit, despite the fact that you guys are all crazy Cheesehead fans. That's all right. I love you anyway. And those of you who are not Packer fans listening to this podcast, I appreciate you following as well. Make sure that you check out all my stuff every week on CheeseheadTV.com, as well as at FootballGuys.com. If you're a fantasy football player, if you're not a member, you should be. And I don't know why you're not. 50,000 pages of content, tons of articles each and every week. My fantasy triage article is up. If you are a member, head over there and read it. Find out who's injured, who's not, and how you fix it up when your lineup gets banged up. That's going to do it for this week's Hard Count. I'll be back on Tuesday night next week, as I'm not going to be covering a Jets Monday night game, so I'm actually going to be able to sleep and do some work Monday night without pulling my hair out. So, I will see you. Same bat time, same bat channel. You have been listening to The Hard Count. I'm Andrew Garda. Thank you for coming by. I'll see you later.
You've been listening to The Hard Count with Aaron Nagler and Andrew Garda.
Let's go again!
Word!
Respect my authority!